is 3 o'clock now, so we can begin the sutta class today. And for those of you who just arrived, you see the sheets are on the table on the back there. Very good. Here we go. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So welcome to today's sutta class, and this sutta class I have chosen a set of suttas from the Anguttara Nikaya. And just Venerable Buddha Rakata was asking me just a few moments ago where did these suttas came from. Many years ago, you know, once I had learnt Pali, I looked through the Anguttara Nikaya in the Pali, which is always much better than the English, no matter who the translator is. And these were a number of suttas which do share a common theme. And that common theme is the idea in Buddhism about conditionality. One thing leading to another, which leads to another, which leads to something else. It's a very important part of the Buddha's teachings, because once you put the causes in place, it is like a snowball effect, and the other effects follow as a natural result of the cause, without you needing to do anything. This is natural cause and effect, very similar to what you learnt in science. This is just a natural phenomena, and when the causes happen, the effects invariably come sometimes later. And there's a whole series, not all together, but in many different places in the Anguttara Nikaya, where there are these conditional sequences. A causes B, causes C, causes D, causes E. And one of the most interesting parts of this is that without the cause, now if the cause A is not there, then B will never happen. So this actually shows what you have to put into place if such things as being able to keep precepts is possible. Except if you want to have the right view of a stream winner. What do you have to have in place, first of all? What you must have in place? If you want to let go of attachment, what must be there first? And the Buddha is very clear here. He says, without that cause, it cannot be that this result happens. So this is a very, very powerful to say, these causes, put them in place, and then the effect is possible. They even have the two words which come from through this sutta is the cause is destroyed. It's a hatha upanissa. It's the whole cause is destroyed. It cannot create the effect. Or the other one, which he says, is netang tanang vichati. Now it cannot be. Now it's not seen that without A you can have B. And so this is very, very strong teachings of the Buddha. Without the first bit, you can't have the second. It just cannot be. So, let's get the first example, which is quite simple. I do apologize for the translation, because it could be clearer in much plainer English. But we'll read the translation, and I'll just say how I would translate it afterwards. The words are okay, but it doesn't have the punch. If you actually just translate, not word for word, but what the meaning is. Here we go. Irreverent. Irreverent is just the first Pali word in the sutta. Bhikkhus. When a bhikkhu is irreverent and undeferential, and his behavior is uncongenial to his fellow monks, it is impossible for him to fulfill the factor of proper conduct. Without fulfilling the factor of proper conduct, it is impossible for him to fulfill the factor of a trainee. And a trainee here is one who is a stream winner, seka. Without fulfilling the factor of the trainee, it is impossible for him to fulfill virtuous behavior. Without fulfilling virtuous behavior, it is impossible for him to fulfill right view. Without fulfilling right view, it is impossible for him to fulfill right concentration. And that word concentration, that's just what Bhikkhu Bodhi said. It is just an uphill battle to get someone like him to call it stillness. It's stillness, for goodness sake. But, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is reverential and deferential and his behavior is congenial to his fellow monks, it is possible for him to fulfill the duty of proper conduct. Having fulfilled the duty of proper conduct, it is possible for him to fulfill the duties of a trainee, of a stream winner. Having fulfilled the duties of a stream winner, it is possible for him to fulfill virtuous behavior. Having fulfilled virtuous behavior, it is possible for him to fulfill right view. Having fulfilled right view, it is possible for him to fulfill right stillness. So these are the factors, one leading to the other. Without the first, the second one can't happen. And the first one is just having respect, it's garbhavo, deferential, and a sabhaga vuttiko is literally nice speech to your fellows in the monastic life. In other words, I would actually call that even like nice speech towards your fellows on the path. And without that respect, that deference, that nice behavior, especially speech, it's impossible for you to fulfill the right conduct. Impossible for the fact of proper conduct. Without fulfilling the proper conduct, the idea of being a trainee is impossible. Without being the trainee, it's impossible to fulfill virtue. And these are one of the most important ones, the virtue, to fulfill your sila. So it's not just five precepts, it's this beautiful deference, respect, and a nice speech to one another. Without that, it's impossible to fulfill right view. Here it was saying that sila, the precepts, are just essential to actually seeing right view. You cannot have right view without precepts. And without that right view, you cannot have right stillness. In other words, your meditation can't go all the way into the jhanas. Because elsewhere, samasamadhi is always the jhanas. That's the first sutta there. Any comments? Yes.
Ajahn, it looks like the stream winning precedes the many others, the conduct, even the right view.
Not really, because when they say the sacred dhamma, I must admit that I caught myself out saying that. I thought somebody would pick that up. Seka, being a seka is a trainee, and that is always usually meant someone who is at least on the path of being a stream winner, if not the stream winner. So I think here you probably say this is someone on the path of being a stream winner.
Destined to be a stream winner.
Yeah, being like a basic trainee. But not being the trainee if someone has achieved.
Okay, so before he's passed away from this life, he's destined.
Yeah, so in other words, this is obviously, in this sutta, it is a precursor to the attainment of being a stream winner. But it does, that's the only thing which can fit in there. But it does also say, samaditi paripurisati, that's the Pali, that means this is fulfilling the right view. And fulfilling right view is, as you pointed out, is the standard definition of being a stream winner. When you fulfill right view, it's not having any right view, it's actually fulfilling it, completing it totally. Then you're a stream winner. And once you fulfill right view, then you can fulfill the samasamadhi, the jhanas. It doesn't mean that you don't have jhanas beforehand. They are not fulfilled. You haven't really got them all together, intact, perfect, whenever you want. Interesting that they say, why is it you need virtue to have right view? Because sometimes people think, no, I can have wisdom, what they call crazy wisdom, and I don't have to keep any precepts. Do whatever I like, but I can still be wise. And here it makes a very, very powerful point. No, you do need sila, your precepts, your virtuous conduct as a direct cause for getting right view. Without that sila, you cannot get right view, which is what the Buddha is saying here. Yes.
In this passage, what's it referred to as right view? We have different interpretations of right view.
You can't have too many interpretations because it's called samadhiti. Samadhiti is always the samadhiti, the first factor of the Eightfold Path. And when they say fulfill it, the word is paripuresati. It means totally complete. It doesn't mean like seeing some of the Dharma and seeing, you know, understanding a little bit of right view. But it means really seeing it totally, and that's always to the point of being a stream winner. Same with the samadhi, the stillness. It's sama samadhi, which is always the four jhanas, always, nothing else, in the suttas. It means actually fulfilling them. Now we all know that many people get jhanas before being a stream winner, such as Devadatta. He didn't fulfill them. He got a couple, but not fully, all the four, fully, whenever he wants. Might say like mastery of them. So if you want to get some mastery of meditation, get your sila together, and then the view will become pure. From that view, the samadhi will become pure. Let's try the next one. Monks, this is mindfulness, just because mindfulness comes first. When there is no mindfulness and clear comprehension, that's sati sampajanya, for one deficient in mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their proximate cause. Take away the proximate, lack their cause. When there is no sense of moral shame and moral dread, for one deficient in sense of moral shame and moral dread, okay, so sometimes the English is so complicated you don't know where to stop and where to start again, I'll try again. Bhikkhus. When there is no mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one deficient in mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their cause. When there is no sense of moral shame and moral dread, for one deficient in sense of moral shame and moral dread, restraint of the sense faculties lack its cause. When there is no restraint of the sense faculties, for one deficient in restraint of the sense faculties, virtuous behavior lacks its cause. When there is no virtuous behavior, for one deficient in virtuous behavior, sama samadhi lacks its cause. When there is no right stillness, for one deficient in right stillness, the knowledge and vision of things as they really are lack their cause. When there is no knowledge and vision of things as they really are, for one deficient in knowledge and vision of things as they really are, disenchantment and dispassion. Disenchantment is nibbida. Again, that's a bad translation. It doesn't mean disenchantment, it means revulsion. And dispassion lack their proximate cause, lack their cause. When there's no revulsion and dispassion, for one deficient in revulsion and dispassion, the knowledge and vision of liberation lack its proximate cause. Dispassion also means fading away, which again is my preferred translation. So, this particular sequence, I'm going to say it again, but now in a more easy to understand form. So, the sati sampajanya, which is mindfulness and clear comprehension, which you may have heard before. Sampajanya means with wisdom. So sometimes clear comprehension doesn't really convey the meaning of that Pali term. It's just a translation which is stuck and nobody dares to say any different. It is mindfulness and wisdom coming together. When there is mindfulness and wisdom, then it is possible to have this sense of moral restraint, of shame and fear of the consequences of wrongdoing. In Pali it's called hiri-otapa. If you're a monk or a nun, you've heard that many times. You've got a feel for what it is. It means before you do an act, you feel this is not right. This is going to lead to the harm of myself or harm of others. That is this hiri-otapa. Without the mindfulness and wisdom, you don't have enough of that sense that this is not the right thing to do, it's going to cause consequences. Without that, you cannot have restraint of the senses. In other words, you will just allow your mind to go and sight and body to do things which it shouldn't do. Without that, you cannot have sila, the virtuous conduct. Without the virtuous conduct, you cannot attain the right stillness. In this case, the jhanas again. Without the right stillness, the jhanas, you cannot get see things as they truly are. Without seeing things as they truly are, you will never experience this revulsion from the things in the world. It's what I call samsara's ejection seat, which is literally pushes you away from things. And without that revulsion, the Buddha's simile to that word nibbida was just like a person has a sore on their limbs, oozing pus. They would have nibbida, revulsion towards that. They just want to turn away from it. Without that revulsion is not the fading away of things. Without the fading away of things, there is not the wisdom of the knowledge and wisdom of release, of enlightenment. So this is another sequence, which I'll repeat again. You can see it in here, but when you see one thing leads to another, which is what the Buddha's talking about, but it's complicated by the way it's written here, is from mindfulness together with wisdom, that causes this sense of shame and fear of wrongdoing, which causes the restraint of the senses, which causes your virtue, which causes jhanas, which causes seeing things as they truly are, which causes this revulsion, which causes things fading away, which causes knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. Without mindfulness and clear comprehension, or sorry, mindfulness and wisdom, you cannot get this fear and shame. Without that fear and shame, you cannot have restraint of your senses. Without restraint of the senses, you just cannot have your virtue. Without your virtue, you just cannot get the jhanas. Without the jhanas, you cannot see things as they truly are. Without seeing things as they truly are, you won't have this revulsion from samsara. Without this revulsion, the things won't start vanishing, disappearing. Without that disappearing, you will never get the knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. That is a much more powerful, but that's actually what it is. There's a simile on page 2. Suppose there is a tree deficient in branches and foliage, then its shoots do not grow to fullness. Also its bark, softwood and heartwood do not grow to fullness. So too, when there's no mindfulness and wisdom, for one deficient in mindfulness and wisdom, the sense of moral shame and dread lack their cause. When there's no sense of moral shame and moral dread, blah, 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 the next thing, which is the sense restraint, can't happen. So say when the first things are like a tree which has good branches and foliage, then they can have shoots which can grow. If they don't have enough branches and leaves, then they haven't got enough energy to push out the shoots. So it's a cause and effect simile. But when there is a tree possessing branches and foliage at the bottom of that second sutta, then its shoots grow. Suppose there is a tree possessing branches and foliage, then its shoots do grow to fullness. Also its bark, softwood and heartwood grow to fullness. So too, when there is, say, samasamadhi, which is jhanas, then knowledge of things as they truly are grows to its fullness. Without it, it doesn't. That is the second sutta, another cause and effects sequence. Yes?
So you have recently been sort of emphasizing on kindfulness.
Kindfulness,
so
yes.
How does it fit into the scheme? Am I right to say that that is supposed to be synonymous with sati sampajana?
Exactly. Because sati sampajana, mindfulness with wisdom, we always include kindness among the wise attitudes towards life. It's wisdom because it produces the correct results. It's a wise way. If you want to go to Serpentine Monastery, and you have wisdom, you know which way to go. It actually produces it makes you reach the goal where you're intending towards. So the kindness will come under the panya, the wisdom.
And the sati is the awareness.
Sati is the awareness, the mindfulness. Sometimes I do say that some of these words are badly translated. Sati was a very brilliant translation. Mindfulness is great. And please remember that these words were translated maybe 120, 30 years ago, mostly by Rhys Davids. Trying to find a nice word, you know, for these Pali terms. Often he got it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. And, for example, the samadhi word, which concentration, as you know, is not what I say samadhi is. And it's not just me. I've been teaching this for such a long time now that many of the disciples are fluent in Chinese, who actually look at the suttas in Chinese, in the Agamas. They came along and said, well done, because in the Chinese, the word for samadhi is never anything to do with concentration in the Chinese. It is stillness. So even the Chinese monks who translated, you know, from the very early Pali or Sanskrit versions, they understood from those early days, 1500 years ago, maybe 1700 years ago, they understood this word samadhi has got nothing to do with concentration. It means stillness. So it is, you know, it is a mistake which happens when, you know, the West starts to get hold of these teachings and they add their slant, you know, to the translations, trying their very best, and they don't change them over the years. It doesn't mean concentration at all. It does mean stillness. That's why, again, I first came along these when I read in Pali. So you get much closer. Everything really comes out into the surface in Pali. You can see exactly what's going on. And especially when you have things like viraga. It can mean dispassion, but it can also mean fading away. And a lot of people say, well, what does fading away mean? Unless you've seen what happens in jhanas when actually many things just disappear. You know, even in meditation, your hands vanish. You know, your body vanishes. You know, will vanishes. Thought vanishes. And soon it should get to a person. That's what viraga means. It's describing something which you experience in meditation. It is things vanish. They disappear. It's not dispassion. Because dispassion is sometimes people say, oh, you Buddhists are so dispassionate, equanimous. You know, you see someone getting raped and say, dispassionate. No, you go and help. So it's not dispassion, it's things fading away. It's a much deeper term than ordinary dispassion. And of course, you know, for those of you who followed me, that this particular, I've already mentioned, this is the first time it's mentioned in these sequences, from Samasamadhi, causes seeing things as they truly are. Here you say that without these, I'll read it out. Here you say right concentration. For one, where is it going? On the first one. I'll just read it out. When there is no right concentration always means jhanas in the suttas. When there is no jhanas, for one deficient in jhanas, the knowledge and vision of things as they really are lacks its cause. It just doesn't happen. The cause of this happening is gone. It's a powerful teaching. Anyway, we'll go on to the next one. 1061. Yeah, this is a nice one. There's actually a number of ones in this. There's actually three. Okay, which there's three. There's 1061 and 62. I think I put both of them over there. Yeah. So these are some very interesting cause and effect sequences. And sometimes people say, oh, you know, that Theravada's got all the truth. And sometimes we can very easily demean other traditions. And there is something which is part of the Mahayana tradition called transmission, to getting the teachings or getting something very powerful from another person. And sometimes people think, oh, that's just Mahayana. It is not, it's Theravada too. And this particular sutra will show what it means. in the Theravada teachings. Here we get another idea of transmission. So this is ignorance, again, just because this is the first term in this sutta. Monks, this is said, a first point of delusion is not seen, such that before this was no... Sorry, I'll start again. Monks, this is said, a first point of delusion is not seen, such that before this there was no delusion, and after it came into being. Still, ignorance is seen to have a specific condition or cause. Now this, again, just that saying is an important saying. When people ask for the first beginning of things, who created the world? Was it God created the world? If so, who created God? And instead of saying God created things, if anything, we say ignorance or delusion created this world. And that is much more feasible when you look at how this world is run. I don't think any person with intelligence and integrity could say that this world was designed and created by an intelligent being. Look at him, how this world works, tsunamis and old age and sickness and death. How could a compassionate, intelligent, powerful being create this mess? But if you say delusion created this mess, yeah, that makes sense. So this is the Buddhists say, who created the world? Delusion did. That makes sense. But, and that's, you know, dependent origination. But the first point of delusion, if delusion created the world, who created delusion? And this is Buddha saying, no, a first point can't be seen. Still, delusion has its causes. I say, monks, that delusion has a nutriment which feeds it. It's not without a nutriment. Now, what is a nutriment for delusion? It should be said the five hindrances. And what are the five hindrances? The five niwaranas. You should know this if you've been to meditation classes before. What are the five hindrances? Kamachanda, which means, yes, kamaraga, which means desire, sensory desire. It's actually the five senses, because the word karma always refers to seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. It does not refer to the desires of the mind. Ill will, vayapada, is number two. Sloth and torpor, yes. Next one, restlessness and remorse. And last one is doubt, the five hindrances. So those are the five hindrances which actually cause delusion. That's what feeds it. We'll come into that afterwards. The five hindrances have a nutriment, which keeps them fed. What is the nutriment of the five hindrances? It should be said the three kinds of misconduct. Three kinds of misconduct, that just means misconduct by the body, speech or mind. Those are always the three types of misconduct. Bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, mental misconduct. That causes the five hindrances. And so I say the three kinds of misconduct too, I say, have nutriment. They're not without nutriment. What's a nutriment for the three kinds of misconduct? It should be, say, non-restraint of the sense faculties. Non-restraint of the sense faculties, I say, has a nutriment. It's not without nutriment. And what is nutriment for non-restraint of the sense faculties? It should be said lack of mindfulness and wisdom. Or you might say lack of kindfulness is the cause for non-restraint of the sense faculties. Lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is a nutriment for lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension? It should be said careless attention. That's ayonisa manasikara. Work of the mind which doesn't go to the source of things. Careless attention too, I say, has a nutriment. It should It is not without nutriment. And what is a nutriment for careless attention? It should be said lack of faith. Lack of faith, I say, has a nutriment. It's not without nutriment. What's a nutriment for lack of faith? It should be said, not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is a nutriment for not hearing the good Dhamma? It should be said, not associating with the good persons. And the good persons, the Satpurisa, is the euphemism in the suttas for the stream winners and above. Thus, associating with stream winners and above, thus not associating with good persons fills up not hearing. So this is really strange. It's just, I'll just read it out and you should be able to understand it yourselves. Thus not associating with good persons, becoming full, fulfilled, and really not associating with Aryans, fills up, completes not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma fills up lack of faith. Lack of faith fills up careless attention. Careless attention fills up lack of mindfulness and wisdom. Lack of mindfulness and wisdom fills up no restraint of the sense faculties. No restraint of the sense faculties fills up the three kinds of misconduct. The three kinds of misconduct fill up the five hindrances. The five hindrances fill up delusion. Thus there is a nutriment for delusion, and this way it becomes full. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on a mountain top, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, the gullies and creeks. These, becoming full, fill up the pools. These, becoming full, fill up the lakes. These, becoming full, fill up the streams. These, becoming full, fill up the rivers. And these, becoming full, fill up the great ocean. Thus there is nutriment for the great ocean, and in this way it becomes full. So too, not associating with good persons is the nutriment for not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma fills up the lack of faith. The lack of faith fills up not having proper attention fills up and not having mindfulness and wisdom. Not having mindfulness and wisdom fills up the lack of sense restraint, which fills up three types of misconduct, which fills up the five hindrances, which fills up and completes delusion. So that's what happens there. So that is the cause, and I'll go through that cause again once more in the opposite way, which is the interesting way, associating with Aryans. That means that one will hear the proper Dhamma. Hearing the proper Dhamma gives rise to faith. Give right faith means you pay proper attention. Pay proper attention gives rise to mindfulness and wisdom. Mindfulness and wisdom gives rise to sense restraint. Sense restraint gives rise to proper conduct in the three doors of body, speech and mind. Proper conduct will lead to the abandoning of the five hindrances, which will lead to starving delusion. Another three causes, but especially associating with the Aryans and hearing the good teachings. Which is, in there again, you have to have the teachings from people who have penetrated them. Otherwise, the Tibetans quite honestly say transmission doesn't work. You don't have faith in the good things, you don't use the mind properly. The no restraint of the senses, the three bad conducts happen, the hindrances are always there, and eventually that will fulfill, keep delusion going strong. Yeah, exactly. Yes. This is why, you know, always, you've been to my retreats before, you know, say, I'm brainwashing you, conditioning you. Sometimes you wonder where some of the things which come out of my mouth come from. And they've been totally conditioned from an Ajahn Chah. Sometimes these things come out and say, where did that come from? And I look back and remember the time when Ajahn Chah said that, but I never understood it at the time. It lodges in there. Teachings, powerful teachings. And the weird thing is also that these teachings, they usually come out, you know, when you're at that sort of those stages where they're really, really important. A lot of the time they're dormant there. But when you get, you know, into the deep stages of meditation or insight, they come out and they push you that bit further. These are teachings of people who have been there before you. and you can't do it without them. You can't see it for yourself. Both. It's the words, but it's like where the words are coming from. As you often say to a person, they can say same teachings, but it's like where it's coming from. You can feel that this has authenticity.
Yeah, that's about holding charge.
So it's about?
That's about holding charge.
Holding charge.
Right? Holding charge. A powerful person, a powerful meditator, a stream winner, someone like that. This is a person who can hold charge. When their words, when they speak, they have a different feeling.
Exactly.
They penetrate deeply into people's minds.
Exactly,
as opposed to someone who has a scattered mind says exactly the same words.
Yeah, not just a scattered mind, but it's superficial. It hasn't come from within. So it's not supported by real wisdom and understanding and experience.
Okay, thanks.
Exactly, yes. Because many people can be very clever, so the intelligence of human beings is immense. But, yes, indeed. So these are the associating with wise people. It comes up again afterwards in another sutta, but we'll carry on with this sutta, because there's some more coming. And this is the Buddha saying again, from true knowledge and liberation have a nutriment. True knowledge and liberation, that's enlightenment. So what is the nutriment which supports this, which causes it? What is the nutriment for true knowledge and liberation? It should be said, turning on to page 4, the 7 factors of enlightenment are the nutriment of this. The 7 factors of enlightenment, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment of the 7 factors of enlightenment? It should be said the 4 foundations or focuses of mindfulness, the Satipatthana. The 4 Satipatthana, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the establishment of mindfulness, for the 4 foundations of mindfulness? It should be said the 3 kinds of good conduct. The 3 kinds of good conduct, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. What is the nutriment for the 3 kinds of good conduct? It should be said, restraint of the sense faculties. Restraint of the sense faculties, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for restraint of the sense faculties? It should be said, mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness and wisdom, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for mindfulness and clear comprehension? It should be said, careful attention. Careful attention, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. What is a nutriment for careful attention? It should be said, faith. Faith, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. What is a nutriment for faith? It should be said, hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. What is a nutriment for hearing the good Dhamma? It should be said, associating with Aryans. These are the stream winners, once returners, non-returners, arahats. Thus, associating with the Aryans fills up hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma fills up faith. Faith fills up the careful attention. Careful attention fills up the mindfulness and wisdom. Mindfulness and wisdom fills up restraint of the sense faculties. Restraint of the sense faculties fills up the 3 kinds of good conduct. The 3 kinds of good conduct fill up the 4 foundations of mindfulness. The 4 foundations of mindfulness fill up the 7 enlightenment factors. The 7 enlightenment factors fill up true knowledge and liberation. Thus there is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation in this way they become filled. Just as when it's raining, the rain pours down in thick droplets. On a mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, gullies and creeks. These becoming full fill up the pools. These becoming full fill up the lakes. These fill up the streams. These fill up the rivers. These fill up the great ocean. Thus there is nutriment for the great ocean. In the same way that we have the associating with good people, with Aryans, leads to listening to their Dhamma, which fills up faith, which fills up careful attention, which fills up mindfulness and clear comprehension, which fills up the 4 foundations of mindfulness, which fills up the 7 enlightenment factors, which fill up the Vijja Vimutti, which is the knowledge of liberation. Yeah, yes, you got your hand up first. Okay. Yes. Yes. Ah. But you're not doing the first thing, you're doing the middle thing. Okay, you're saying in all this conditional sequence, A leads to B to C to D to E to E, F to G. So if I just do one of the middle ones, say D, then I can actually get to the very end of the sequence. You have to start from the beginning, because you cannot fulfill mindfulness here without fulfilling all these other things. You can't fulfill the mindfulness without the where's the mindfulness come? Without the careful attention, without the faith, without the listening to the teachings of the Aryans, and without seeing the Aryans. The Aryans, yes. Exactly, mindfulness will come. You will be brainwashed. It will happen. You have no choice. It's not part of your will. Whether you like it or not, you know, you will start to practice. That's why the Buddha said, the Kalyanamitta, noble friends, is 100% of the holy path. When I first heard that, I thought, hey, hang on, 100%? Because the Ananda said 50%, the Buddha said 100%. How can it be 100%? Surely you've got to keep precepts and meditate, not just hang around with holy friends. Well, the Buddha meant by 100%, if you hang around with holy friends, then all these other things will happen automatically, whether you like it or not. That's why it's 100%. This is what I keep saying, you don't do it. You know, you're just totally conditioned, and if you get conditioned by holy monks and nuns or people, then you've got no choice. Yeah. You say all these holy qualities are things you aim to develop, and I keep saying you can't develop them. Just look at the second sutta of the Buddha, the Anattalakkhana Sutta. He was saying all these five khandhas, you can't do anything with them. But they don't belong to you. If they were me, I'd say, oh, may my consciousness be like this or be like that. And the Buddha said, it doesn't belong to you, you can't do that. This is the great myth. That we can make ourselves enlightened. That we can do it. You do need another. And that was the wonderful thing of having a Buddha arise in the world. Now the seed is there, the yeast. And now we can make bread. Without any yeast at all, there can't be bread. That's the amazing thing about a Buddha arising in the world. An Aryan is there, which makes enlightenment for others possible. Yes, go on. Yes. Indeed, you can see just how the cause and effect work. But the great thing is the cause and effect sequence is not something you do. How many times have I said, there's no will there, there's no self. No, who else? There's nobody in there, Prasada. So who can be doing this practice? Where does this practice come from? You know, we all know that theoretically. The Buddha keeps on saying this. No, there's not me, not mine, not self. There's nobody in here, or here, wherever you want to point to. So who does the practice? It's cause and effect. Basically, Ajahn Chah did my practice for me. And Ajahn Mun did Ajahn Chah's practice. All goes back to the Buddha.
Pante?
Yes, go on.
The implications of what you're saying are really quite profound, because what you're really saying is that a great deal of the teaching of meditation in the West is largely a waste of time.
Yeah.
And that it is... Yeah, that's right. It is a waste of time, because it hasn't got that first ingredient, And it sort of fits with why a lot of people come along to meditation centres like this, stick around for a couple of years and then nick off. They don't, it doesn't bite into them. If they don't get that link into the, you know, the deeper teachings, yeah, etc., they'll only stick around for a period of time, a couple of years, and then go.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's got pretty amazing implications.
It has indeed. Yeah.
For how Buddhism is taught and how meditation is taught.
Exactly.
In the West.
Precisely, it has. But actually, just seeing this, you can see just after a while, this all gels. You can see, you know, you've heard non-self so many times, and you've heard all the suttas. There's nobody in here. The five khandhas, you know, the body, the feeling, perception, sankhavas, including will and thought, consciousness itself, the six consciousnesses, none of them are self. Who can do anything? Who's in charge? How does enlightenment work when there's no one in charge, no one to do the practice? And these suttas answer that. That's why they're brilliant. The cause and effect. This is a wonderful thing which the Buddha taught. I don't know if I made it clear enough, but when I did talk about the Upanishad Sutta and a similar one, when I was doing some suttas from the Sangyutta, I did mention that this Buddha's great teaching, you can't say there is something, you can't say there's nothing. It's not a soul or existence, it's not nothing at all. This is cause and effect business. Cause and effect, that's the essence of, you know, this universe. That's why physics, you know, is pretty close to the Dharma, cause and effect. You're a psychologist, cause and effect. And what causes these things? How can I take these causes away so these antisocial behavior doesn't exist anymore? It's all cause and effect. And we apply that right to the meditation. We don't do things. It just, when the cause and effect, it just happens by itself.
Well, it's pretty dramatic that, you know, we sit in and do meditation and people are banging on in this room for years and years and years, yeah, sitting, watching their breath, and eventually go to sleep. Yeah. But, in fact, never really getting anywhere to a deep place.
Yeah, and I keep telling them, look, sometimes they don't listen. We're just talking with a thing. Who was it was talking? You can talk for years and years and years. Don't try to meditate. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. Don't do it. Get out of the way, let it happen. And so, oh yeah, I've got to watch the breath. So, no, stop it. Just let it happen. No, I've got to watch the breath. But after a while, the message gets through. And some usually they get frustrated trying to do it themselves. And then they just let go. I can't do it anymore. They give up. And then it happens. Hey, presto. I've been saying that for years.
It seems to me, from what you're saying, that sila is just a far more important ingredient than actually just effort in getting to a deep place of stillness.
Right. What is sila? It's restraint. It's not doing things. It's stopping. Restraint is a non-doing. Okay. Saying no. Sometimes people ask, you know, right effort. What's right effort? Right effort's in there. They keep thinking right effort means I have to do the effort. It's to stop yourself getting involved. You know, the old joke about, you know, I spent a lot of time in aircraft, so I'm getting bored and reading these sort of in-flight magazines. And they said, aircraft in the future will be totally automatic because pilots are a danger. They make mistakes. You know, and computers are usually much more reliable than people. And so they said, in the future they'll have only two people in the cockpit, the pilot and the dog. And the pilot is there to feed the dog. The dog is there to bite the pilot if he touches anything. You know, you can actually see it. And I'd love to have that in meditation. To have a dog, you know, meditate with you. And if you do anything, if you try, the dog bites you. Stop it. How do you spot an Aryan? That is one of the difficult problems. Because if they are an Aryan, they tell you, then they're not. when I was looking through this, I was looking for one other little extra for one of these words which are coming up soon. And I got into another sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya about how enlightened beings made that claim to the Buddha. And there was two of them. They went up to the Buddha and they said, an enlightened being never thinks they're better, they're worse, or the same as anybody else. And the Buddha said, correct. And then they left. And another enlightened monk came along, said the same thing. An enlightened being sort of never even thinks for a moment they're better than anybody else, they're worse than anybody else, or the same as anybody else. Correct, said the Buddha. And the Buddha turned around to Ananda and said, that's how enlightened beings tell me that they've seen the truth. It's brilliant. They're not the same as others, they're not different, they're not worse. They've overcome this whole idea of a self, which can be better, which can be worse. So if you say, I am enlightened, I am a stream winner, I am this, I am that, that's 100% certain you're not. That's why it's difficult to find an Aryan. But if they say they are, you can tick them off the list. No, they can't be. You can know them by their conduct and also by the power of the teachings. It smells right. It feels. This is puts all those teachings which you've heard all into a very easy to understand form.
What I deal with that question actually years ago is I just follow what the others. I think is it Mahayana where they say when you do everything right, the proper teacher will just appear for you.
So. But if you do everything right,
in sense of the doing,
you don't need the teacher. Yeah, they do say that. Yeah,
you do it right.
Yeah, okay. Well, keep doing things right then.
Can I ask a study of where in this sutta, this one that you're talking about, how do we connect the jhana in where you know if you're a person who likes
jhana, the seven factors of enlightenment, the seventh factor or the sixth factor is samadhi. Number six of the seven factors of enlightenment is samadhi. Seventh is upekkha. This is number six in the seven factors. Okay? Okay. We'll do the next sutta. The next sutta, again, it's just one after the one before, so it's very similar. But it has something, again, a nice, beautiful, extra to it, craving. A first point of craving for existence, bhava dhanha, craving to be. I always like the craving to be. Of all the cravings, that is the big one. So there are three cravings, a craving to annihilate yourself, which the Buddha said is like a dog running around chasing its tail, can never catch it, I trying to destroy an I. Or my simile was from Oliver Twist, it's like a person trying to eat their own head. And that's a much more interesting one because you start to think, how could you eat your own head? You cannot sort of visualize it, but you know, you can't obviously do it. People try to think of ways, how could they eat their own head? Because your mouth is part of your head, therefore you just can't do it. Which is the same way of vibhavadana, trying to destroy or cease a self, cannot be done. You cannot do it. And the other one is kamadana, the craving for the sense pleasures. But the craving to exist, the craving to be, is the deepest and most powerful one. It's the craving to be, which is the fear, you see, as a fear arises in meditation when you're about to lose something. Losing your body, it disappears. Losing your will, the mind starting to disappear, you know, in the arupa states. This is frightening because you are disappearing. You are not existing anymore. Even this whole idea of not doing anything. For many people, as you all know from philosophy, doing something makes you feel you exist. If you don't do anything, it's like you don't exist anymore. You aren't anyone. A lot of times people in meditation, they want to do something, anything, just to show they're still there. Which is one of the reasons why it's so hard to let go. Because what you're really letting go of is your craving to be, to exist. I am because I do things. If I don't do anything, I'm gone. That's why when you are very still, your whole idea of who you are vanishes. As long as you're doing things, it's the same old me again. When you stop, you vanish. You're gone. And that is scary. So, that's why I love this one. A first point of craving to be is not seen, such that before there was craving to be, and afterwards it came into being. Before there was no craving to be, and afterwards it came to be. Still, for craving to be, it seemed to have a specific cause. So this is the creation of the world. It's not delusion, it's not God. It's a craving to be creates this universe. It's brilliant. Not a God, the craving to be. I crave to be, therefore the universe comes into existence. That's really nice. You can really get your head around that and just have a lot of wasted time thinking about it. So anyway, the craving to be. So, still the craving to be seems to have a condition, a cause. What's the cause for the craving to be? It's not without Newton. What is the cause, the Newton word for the craving to be? It should be said delusion. And delusion too has a nutriment, it's not without a nutriment. What is the nutriment for delusion? Just as before, it is the five hindrances. The five hindrances have their cause, which is the three wrong conducts, which have their cause, which is the lack of sense restraint. The lack of sense restraint have their cause, which is the lack of mindfulness and wisdom. The lack of mindfulness and wisdom has the cause, which is uncareful attention, which has its cause, which is lack of faith, which has its cause, which is not listening to the good teaching, which has its cause of not hanging around with Aryans. So this is the other, the next little causal sequence, which adds this extra, the craving to be business. And that is by associating with Aryans. You hear the good Dharma, you arise faith, you have the proper attention, looking at the right things, not the stupid things, which gives rise to mindfulness and clear comprehension, which gives rise to the restraint of the senses, which gives rise to the three right conducts, which gives rise to the stopping of the five hindrances, which gives rise to the abandoning of delusion, which gives rise to the ending of the craving to be. That's the one I like the best. Because you cannot stop the craving to be, except by hanging around the Aryans and getting that sort of input from them. Okay. Yes. Craving for movement, indeed, going somewhere is the same as doing something. So, craving to move. If you let go, it causes stillness. If you do, it creates movement. So, again, the doing and the movement are the same. Existing is moving. When you are still, it vanishes. So, yeah, I agree with you. Yes.
Ajahn, let me ask a sort of a more cheeky question here.
Yes.
Is it associating with Aryans if I were to extend your teaching further, the Buddhist
teaching
further? So what's the cause for being able to associate with Aryans? And of course, my understanding is there is the Panya Chaku, that it is sense right, it feels right. But what's the cause for that?
Well, the cause of that, you might say actually this is the good karma from previous lives. You know, having had enough good karma. That's the only thing I could say. Anyone suggest anything more than that? Being reborn as a human being, yeah? But yes, I would say so. And I think sometimes in the commentaries, like when I was looking at these, I looked at the commentaries, which is in the notes in the back of Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, I thought, gee, this is really strange, because all the commentaries, the Anguttara, is just basically Abhidhamma stuff, and nothing to do with the word of the Buddha. As I told Ajahn Brahmani, he said, you were editing this, why didn't you sort of stop all and get some interesting things in the notes, instead of just, you know, more Abhidhamma stuff? And he said, I'll just forget about those notes. What's in here you know, is actually you know, more important. And so what's the question again? I forget where I was going with that. Oh, that's right, yeah, that's right. I remember now, so yeah. So the commentary was... Yeah. Well, that's right, because the commentary actually said, and this is one thing which I think the commentary may have a good point to, he said even these suttas, these are the word of the Buddha. So he's actually reading a lot of suttas, contemplating those suttas. Does that fulfill these factors? And that might be true. Because, you know, these are the word of the Buddha. Especially if you can get to the heart of them. Unfortunately, the English translations, yeah, they're sort of all right, but they don't have the same oomph as in the Pali. And they do have a power to them. And yeah, I think that maybe that might be good enough as being associating with the teachings of the Aryans. Yes, yeah, certainly. I mean, you've read these suttas sometimes, and when you read these suttas, wow! It really gets to you. It really gets you right inside. So yeah, that may be also, even the written word.
But Ajahn, I thought in the forest tradition, they keep saying these are the ancient scriptures, and that the path seem to have been closed until the appearance of Ajahn Mun.
I'm part of that tradition. That's crazy talk.
Oh, I see.
That's nothing to do with... Ajahn Mun did not start the forest tradition. That was just another myth. There were so many other monks at that time, so many other strands of the forest tradition. But Ajahn Mun was one of them, and just, you know, people are just taking him up as the only one, when there was many. It's called hagiography. Our teacher was the best, the first. One day they're going to say Ajahn Brahm started the Buddhist Society of WA. I did not. I did not even start Bodhinyana Monastery. Ajahn Jacko did. But you know what happens? People just forget those things and they just praise you too much. So be careful. No, Ajahn Mun did not start the forest tradition. There were other monks there too. Yeah.
I don't mean to be personal or offensive, but let's say it's a real thing. Ajahn Chah supposedly, let's say you read it and you say he's an arahant. And you look at his senior disciple, and if you say one of them say that don't do jhana, you still can enlighten.
Yeah.
That it's a very dichotomy that is so clear cut that if you want to follow the teaching, you got to make your stand. No? You want to follow jhana teacher or don't follow jhana teacher.
Yeah.
And I think people should be very clear instead of, I don't know, this has been going on like how many years, and I think it's a waste of time to keep talking about jhana or not jhana. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying everybody must do jhana, but I think we must make our stand.
Yeah, of course.
I better don't tell them, because I'm not meant to be offensive, but I just tell that it's don't waste time.
Don't waste time on not doing jhanas. It's obvious, anyone who reads the suttas. And it's obvious if you've had those jhanas as well. But remember, even the Buddha's disciples, not all of them were Aryans. So Ajahn Chah's disciples, not all of those will be Aryans either. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is scary, but you have a look at these suttas and it's quite clear. And actually it's fascinating now that, you know, I'm going off on a tangent now, nothing to do with these suttas, but this was, you know, a battle which, you know, an argument which was going on a long time, but it's been won a long time ago. Everybody knows you have to have jhanas now. That's why the jhanas are becoming more and more taught in our modern world. And even a just personal anecdote, when I went to the United States some years ago, and there was the two strong Vipassana. Vipassana was the anti-jhana school. You know, if there is an anti-jhana school. And the two main proponents in the United States, the two famous ones, were Joseph Goldstein and Jack Kornfield. And I was surprised that, you know, I got the word they wanted to invite me for tea, one in their meditation center in the East Coast, the IMS, and the other one in Spirit Rock, you know, in California. So I went round for tea. First of all, to Joseph Goldstein's place, and I was surprised he invited me. And then he spent the whole 2 hours with his senior teachers talking about jhanas. Oh, sure. I thought you guys went into jhanas. Oh, yeah, we are, because our teacher, Upandita, who was one of the senior disciples of Mahasi Sayadaw, he says, no, that vipassana as it is not enough. You have to do jhanas. Basically, you know, this was the opposition to jhanas saying, no, you have to do jhanas. And the same thing happened with Jack Kornfield, you know, talking about jhanas over there in the United States. So this was basically those teachers in the West, the big ones, the most influential, those two, and they would say, no, we do jhanas these days. That's personal, but that's what they said. But anyway, let's go back to the sutta. 1076, incapable. And this is like incapable because when you haven't got the second is incapable. And this is one of the best. So please stay for this one. If these three things were not found in the world, the Buddha, the Arahat, the perfect enlightened one would not arise in the world. And the Dharma discipline proclaimed in him would not shine in the world. What three? Birth, old age and death. These three were not found in the world, the Buddha, the Arahant, the perfect enlightened one would not arise in the world. And the Dhamma discipline proclaimed by him would not shine in the world. But because these three things are found in the world, the Buddha comes and his Dhamma shines. Without abandoning three things, one is incapable of abandoning birth, old age and death. What three? Lust, hatred and delusion, or greed, hatred and delusion. Without having abandoned greed, hatred and delusion, one is incapable of abandoning birth, old age and death. Without abandoning three things, one is incapable of abandoning greed, hatred, and delusion. What is these three? Personal existence view, that's Sakaya Ditti. Doubt and wrong grasp of behavior and observances, that's the seal of Bhatta Paramasa. Those are the three fetters to be abandoned at stream winning. Without abandoning three things, one is incapable of abandoning the three fetters. Without abandoning these three things, you can't be a soul one, stream winner. So listen up. What three? Careless attention, following a wrong path, and mental sluggishness. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning the three fetters. I'll say actually what following a wrong path is in a moment. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning careless attention, wrong path, mental sluggishness. What three? Muddle-mindedness. That means actually the opposite of mindfulness. Lack of wisdom, clear comprehension, and mental distraction, which is the same as restlessness. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning careless attention, following a wrong path, and mental sluggishness. Without abandoning these three things, one is incapable of abandoning muddled mindfulness, lack of clear comprehension, and mental distraction. What three? Lack of desire to see the noble ones, lack of desire to hear the noble Dhamma, and a mind bent on criticism. The mind bent on criticism, when I first read this, the Uparamba Chitta, that was the word I translated, and one of my favorite words, the fault-finding mind. That's where you've heard me say fault-finding mind so often. This is where it came from, this sutta. Wow, without abandoning the fault-finding mind. I think I like that one better, with a mind bent on criticism, the fault-finding mind. What three? Restlessness, non-restraint, and immorality. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning the lack of desire to see the noble ones, the lack of desire to hear their Dhamma, and fault-finding mind. Without having abandoned three things, one is incapable of abandoning restlessness, non-restraint, and immorality. What three? Lack of faith, uncharitableness, and laziness. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning restlessness, non-restraint, and immorality. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning lack of faith, uncharitableness, and laziness. What three? Disrespect, being difficult to correct, and bad friendship. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning lack of faith, uncharitableness, and laziness. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning disrespect, being difficult to correct, and bad friendship. What three? Moral shamelessness, moral recklessness, and heedlessness. That's the hiri-otapa, which we were saying before, and pamada. Without having abandoned these three things, one is incapable of abandoning disrespect, being difficult to correct, and bad friendships. So bhikkhu is one who is morally shameless, morally reckless, is heedless. One who is heedless is incapable of abandoning disrespect, being difficult to correct, and bad friendship. One who has bad friends is incapable of abandoning lack of faith, uncharitableness, and laziness. They just go down this whole list from one to the other. Now I will say it. It's the first one is the lack of hiri, the lack of otapa. This is again the sense of shame of doing something wrong and the fear of the consequences, and also pamada, which many of you know. Pamada, heedlessness, sometimes it also means like drunkenness, basically madness. That heedlessness, just going around not really caring what you're doing. Those are the first three. And without abandoning those, you cannot abandon the disrespect, the bad speech, bad friends. Without abandoning that, you cannot develop faith. You cannot abandon stinginess and idleness. Without abandoning that, you can't abandon restlessness, lack of restraint, and bad virtue. Without abandoning those things, you can never develop the desire to see the Aryans, the desire to listen to their Dharma, and they can't abandon the fault-finding mind. Without abandoning those three things, you can't abandon lack of mindfulness, lack of clear comprehension, and a mind which is restless. Those of you with restless minds, just saying, bring the mind back onto the breath or whatever, that's not good enough. See where it all comes from. And without abandoning that, you cannot abandon lack of proper attention. And this, the wrong path, kumaga sevana. And one of the quotes which comes up later on in the Anguttara, they say what kumaga means. They say, asamadhi kumaga, samadhi maga. Samadhi, stillness is the path. The lack of stillness is the wrong path. That's the word of the Buddha. He says that very, very clearly. That's actually what kumaga means here, which is here, wrong path. That's where the samadhi comes in here. So I would say samadhi, and chaitaso linatang means just a sluggish, lazy mind. Without doing that, you cannot abandon the three fetters. Without abandoning the three fetters, you cannot abandon the three kilesas, greed, hate, and delusion. Without abandoning the greed, hate, and delusion, you cannot abandon old age, sickness, and death. Now, one of the things on that, especially for monks, you know, as monks, we're not supposed to have desires, we're not supposed to get angry, you know, but sometimes it became so hard as a young monk. I'm not supposed to have desires, you know, but that food looked really nice. Yeah, I'm not supposed to have lust, but that young Thai girl coming in there, wow, she's really hot. How can you deal with that? And instead of just saying restraint and saying you can't, you have to stop it and restrain it, you know, the problem of celibacy, there's only one way to do that. If you're going to stop raga and dosa and moha, greed, hate, delusion, the only way to do that is to abandon the three fetters first of all. You can't do that when you think there's a self in there. You will always have lust, greed, and ill will if you have not abandoned the first three fetters. So you have to be a stream winner first of all before you've got a chance of abandoning greed, hatred, and delusion. So because of that, my understanding that, I mean, just give the monks and nuns a chance. Yeah, they'll get angry. They can't do anything about it. They're not a stream winner yet. So forget about that. See if you can build up the causes for them being a stream winner. And then the greed, hatred, and delusion will look after itself. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, banning, developing it. Yeah. Yes, I agree with that. Maybe I won't repeat it in case people get upset. Very good. But so, how do you overcome the three fetters? And again, it's the yonisamanasikara, work of the mind going to the source. And samadhi comes in here. Sometimes this is what happens when you read it in Pali. So you make the connections there. In a couple of sutras afterwards, the Buddha mentions, now what is this kumagga, this wrong path which you just seen? He says specifically, samadhi, stillness is the path. Lack of stillness, lack of samadhi is this wrong path which is written in here. It's the same Pali word. So when you see the Pali words repeated, and you make the connections, and this is what the Buddha meant. And sometimes the connections aren't there in the English. You don't get it. So the wrong path here is samadhi. So you can't abandon the three fetters without samadhi, without stillness. Without, you know, when you have a lazy mind, you know, when your mind is not working properly. How do you get to that stillness? You have to abandon the restless mind. Makes sense. And you have to have mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness, clear comprehension, abandon restlessness, you get the stillness. From the stillness, you get the abandoning of the three fetters. But how do you get that stillness, that lack of restlessness and mindfulness and clear comprehension? Isn't it beautiful? You go and listen to the teachings of the Aryans. Have you ever listened to a teaching and it's been so beautiful, you're just so still afterwards, you're so peaceful? You know, sometimes it gets to you and just there's no restlessness left at all. And neither is this fault-finding mind, which is one of the reasons why we are restlessness. We are restless. Why are we restless? Because this isn't good enough. You know, you want to go and see something else, do something else. We get something else. The old story, I remember doing this when I was a kid, when we had small fridges which were mostly empty. These days I've been into people's houses and the fridges, things are falling out from the fridge and they go, like, nothing to eat. When I was a kid, we had two channels on TV, BBC and ITV. Now on TV, 32, 40, 60 channels. Nothing on TV. Oh my goodness, what are you talking about? That's like the restless, fault-finding mind, never finding any contentment at all. And because there's no contentment, because there's always finding fault with things, the uparambachitta, that is why we have no stillness. Yes. Yes, I don't know about that. It gives the satisfaction because it overcomes that fault-finding mind. The old two bad bricks in the wall thing, that's a beautiful simile, the fault-finding mind. That wall isn't good enough, I've got to put it down. So never have any rest at all in life. Not even in the mind. My mind's not good enough. I've got to make it different. That's the fault-finding mind. If you overcome that, your mind is still. And from the stillness, you get mindfulness. Sorry, from that stillness, you can abandon the three fetters, and then the whole of the kilesas, and abandon old age, sickness, and death. And where that actually comes from, the fault-finding mind, and wanting to see the irons, comes from this another form of restlessness. And lack of restraint, bad precepts. And again, without those precepts, you know, you don't want to see the aliens. You don't want to sort of, you always have a fault-finding mind. Interesting, those people who have some bad conduct always criticize other people for the same thing. You know, that's, yeah, you know. So people without metta say, you know, you should have more metta. People who talk too much, they're the ones who say, you shouldn't talk so much. We've got the fault-finding mind because we've got bad precepts ourselves. And that comes from lack of faith. Stinginess. Being, you know, generous. That's actually down here. Well, what is the, I've got it down as stinginess here. What, down your tongue? Where is that? The noble ones. Yeah. Uncharitableness they got here. It doesn't mean just charitable in, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt. It means, you know, getting out your wallets and giving some money to the nuns and monastery fund. That is what it means. And that is a direct cause, okay? A direct cause of overcoming precepts, lack of restraint. It causes you want to see the Aryans. Takes away the fault-finding mind. Gives you mindfulness and clear comprehension and a still mind, which makes you overcome the three hindrances, the three fetters, and the defilements. It's a wonderful place here where you can see stinginess is, of course, stopping you from becoming enlightened. And that comes from, you know, disrespect, bad speech, bad friends. You know, the guys who go to the pub on a Saturday night, you know, they don't feel like coming here. So anyway, that's one of my favorite suttas, because it has this beautiful three things causing another three things, causing another three things. And some of the stuff they say there is beautiful. And it's one of the things which makes me as a teacher give my monks a bit of space. Yeah, they get angry, they get upset, or they have a bit of lust or greed. That's okay, guys, because you can't do anything about it. You know, I'm going to focus on these other things first of all. Focus on the causes so that those things get less and less and less. Make sure you don't have fault-finding mind, for example. Make sure you are generous. And make sure that, you know, you want to sort of listen to the teachings. And that will actually create that stillness, that mindfulness and clear comprehension, that you follow the path of stillness, and then you won't have those things anymore. So you don't say, just, oh, restrain yourself. Just, you see a woman come in, just think she's a bag of filth. That's gross. Some people actually do that. And it doesn't work either. You know, you've got to find the real causes. And that way, you know, can actually stop all the greed and the ill will. Why do you get angry? It's just fault-finding mind gone crazy. So that's the cause and effect. That's one of my favorite ones. Okay. I'm just going to go to the end because it's just repeating what I've said in brief. 103, 10103, the wrong course. Page 8. Oh, I just put this one in here. Because sometimes this is a place where the eightfold path of all things. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. Sometimes people say, oh, eightfold path, you do this one first and then another one, then something else. But this is a place where the eightfold path is one thing leading to another. Bhikkhus, in depending on the wrong course, there is failure, not success. And how is that in dependence on the wrong course, there is failure, not success? For one of wrong view, wrong intention originates. For one of wrong intention, wrong speech originates. For one of wrong speech, wrong action originates. For one of wrong action, wrong livelihood originates. For one of wrong livelihood, wrong effort originates. For one of wrong effort, wrong mindfulness originates. For one of wrong mindfulness, wrong stillness originates. It goes a bit further. For one of wrong stillness, wrong knowledge originates. One of wrong knowledge, wrong liberation originates. In this way, dependence on the wrong course is failure, not success. Otherwise, independence on the right course is success, not failure. And how is that independence on the right course is success, not failure? For one of right view, right intention originates. For one of right intention, right speech originates. For one of right speech, right action originates. One of right action, right livelihood originates. One of right livelihood, right effort originates. For one of right effort, right mindfulness originates. For one of right mindfulness, right stillness originates. For one of right stillness, right knowledge originates. For one of right knowledge, right liberation originates. In this way, independence on the right course is success, not failure. This is the eightfold path plus the two extra, which is not the path, but the results. The knowledge and liberation. Now sometimes we say, we're a bit of this and a bit of that. But what this is really pointing out to, the place which I mentioned earlier where right view actually really is, and is fulfilled, is of course the stream winner. So this is where once one becomes the stream winner, you have right intention. That is fulfilled. Now, once that is the first one which is always fulfilled, then the other ones come as a natural course. Once you become a stream winner, you can't stop this. One of right view, the right intention will come. Once you realize there's no self, there's no one in here, of course you will have intentions of letting go, kindness and gentleness, the three right intentions. Whenever there's a self in there, you may understand the teaching of the Buddha say there's not a self, but you always actually think from the point of me. And from that, there'll always be accumulation, not letting go. Always be wanting to attain things rather than just abandoning things. The first right intention won't be there. There'll always be some harshness, not real kindness. And there will always be a bit of violence. I don't mean sort of punching people, but violence to yourself, being harsh rather than being gentle. Whenever there's a sense of self, that will happen. Once that is disappeared, then of course right intention can be purified. And once you have the intention purified, of course right speech, action, livelihood must be purified, because they all come. What you do, what you think, what you say all comes from your intention. And from that, the right effort of letting go, saying no, stopping, coming from the right intention. Make that right intention to the right effort. From intention you get the effort. The intention of letting go, renouncing, may come. It is literally the effort to say no, to stop, give up. And from that the mindfulness comes. From that comes the stillness. And from the stillness comes the knowledge, the wisdom, and also the release. That is how the path works. So I like that one, because it just gives this angle on the Eightfold Path, making it a tenfold, because the eight is the path, and the ninth and tenth, which is the knowledge and the liberation, are the results. That's why it's not really a path. It's what happens when you follow that path. Restraint. It's more important to let go than to do. More important to stop than to do more things. Now, those of you who won my last retreats or whatever retreats, you know Ajahn Chah's simile. To get the mango to fall, you just have to sit under the tree, perfectly still, and open up your hand, and mangoes fall in it. The last one, another proximate cause. Here we go, which is, this is close to the Upanishad Sutra. I'll put this one in because this is perhaps a well-known of the causal sequences. For an immoral person, one deficient in virtuous behavior, non-regret lacks its cause. When there is no non-regret, joy lacks its cause. When there is no joy, rapture lacks its cause. When there is no rapture, tranquility lacks its cause. When there is no tranquility, pleasure lacks its cause. When there's no pleasure, samadhi or samasamadhi, jhanas, lack their cause. When there is no jhanas, right concentration, samasamadhi is always jhanas. When there's no jhanas, knowledge and vision of the things as they really are lack its cause. When there is no knowledge and vision of things as they really are, disenchantment, or rather nibbida, this revulsion lacks its cause. When there is no nibbida, fading away lacks its cause. When there's no fading away, here called dispassion, knowledge and vision of liberation lacks its cause. Suppose there's a tree deficient in branches and foliage, then its shoots do not grow to fullness. Also its bark, softwood and heartwood do not grow to fullness. So too, for an immoral person, one deficient in virtuous behavior, non-regret lacks its cause, and so on. But for a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous, non-regret has its cause. When there is non-regret, joy, which is, this is they call pamuja. Pamuja is the sort of joy when you have no regrets on what you've done. This beautiful peace of mind, this happiness born of non-regret. So whatever you've done today, you look back upon it, you've done a really good day. No regrets at all. That type of joy of non-regret. Innocent joy, you can call it that, yeah. It's just one of the nice things of Buddhism, we have so many words for happiness. Just like the Eskimos have so many words for snow, so they say, the Buddhists have all these different words for happiness, which is indicative of what Buddhism is all about. So I like to make that point, that this is a happy path. We've got all these different words for it, and sometimes even great scholars like Bhikkhu Bodhi have a hard time finding another word for this happiness. So when there is, where's the pamuja? When there is joy possesses its cause, for one possessing joy, rapture, which is this pity, another type of joy, happiness. When rapture possesses its cause, when there is rapture, tranquility, prasadi, which is another form of happiness, by the way, possesses its cause. When there is tranquility, pleasure, this sukha, has its cause. When there is sukha, jhanas happen. Jhanas have their cause. For one who possesses the jhana, knowledge and vision of things as they are possesses its cause. When there is knowledge and vision of things as they really are, this nibbida has its cause, this revulsion. When the revulsion has its cause, fading away has its cause, here called dispassion. When fading away has its cause, the knowledge and vision of liberation has its cause. So again, just as there are a tree possessing branches and foliage. So this particular cause and sequence, causal sequence starts again from virtue. Again, we said earlier, the importance of virtue for everything in the path. Once there is this virtue, then there is this lack of regret. And when there's lack of regret, they've got this beautiful sense of joy and happiness in life. We all know, as psychologist Chris, that sometimes that people who do live good lives, virtuous lives, are actually happier than those who just indulge in just going to the brothels or the pubs and nightclubs. Now, keeping precepts makes you happier. It actually raises your happiness level. Yeah, okay. He's saying that those who come to tell him all their problems is because, you know, they've got no sort of precepts, no virtuous behavior. But it really is a great protection. It should never be underestimated. And so when you have this lack of regret, you have this energy called pamuda, this happiness, which creates this deeper energy called piti, which is important. It's actually joy. You're really enjoying what you're doing. Sometimes people call it enthusiasm. And I kind of, that's not that bad a translation at this point. And from that enthusiasm, then you can have tranquility. Tranquility of body and tranquility of mind. How can you sit still? And you do find that people, you know, who don't have a good precepts, you know, they cannot sit still for 2 minutes. When you have some good precepts, you can be physically still because you get this joy and this happiness. That's why also just forcing the body, you know, in some types of meditation, sitting through pain, there's not tranquility, there's no joy there. It can't work. The pity and the pamuja are not there. And once the body is tranquil and the mind is tranquil, you get this happiness come up in meditation. That's what I was focusing on Saturday. Anybody was here for that meditation talk. When the body gets tranquil, just experience its delight, the delight of a rested body. It feels so good. My body doesn't have to move. I don't have to do anything. Don't have to speak. I can just relax. And that is delightful. When the body becomes still, that is delightful too. When you can pay attention to the delight of a still mind and still body, you'll find you're valuing it and it will stay there a long time. Just the delight of peace and stillness. Oh, that's gorgeous. And that leads to that stillness getting so strong it turns into the jhanas. It sort of solidifies. The happiness is what solidifies the jhanas. And from the jhanas, you see things as they truly are. And when you see things as they truly are, you give up these things. You know, there is, you revolted from just getting involved in stupid things. You leave them alone. They fade away. And then you have the knowledge and vision of enlightenment, freedom. Another causal sequence. So that's the last causal sequence in this little list here. And you can go over them again at home if you wish. But the main point was not actually the... Well, there's a few of the interesting links here. The main point was actually what Prasada was pointing out. That this is just what happens. It's not what you do. It's a cause and effect process. And this is almost at the heart of the teachings of the Buddha. If you do this, this is what happens, this is what happened next, this is what happened next. Put this cause in place, the effect will happen afterwards. And to actually understand that fundamental framework understanding of the Buddha's teachings makes many things very clear. It's not something that you do, it's something which just happens to you. That's what Buddhism is. Causal sequences. So, questions now, yeah? Yeah. Great. Indeed. I mean, that's an excellent point. Sometimes we can criticize teachers because they just focus on keeping your precepts. And why don't you talk about jhana? Just keep your precepts. And the jhanas will come in a natural course. Be a good nun. Keep the precepts. Get rid of the fault-finding mind. They're creating the causes. But it's when the teachers say, no, don't do jhanas, then that causes a problem. So if they say, focus on this, focus on that, fine. You're focusing on the causes, the jhanas will come. That's why you've heard me say so many times, if you want a jhana, don't want it. Don't aim for it, don't strive for it. Strive for the causes, the stillness. Put the causes in place and the jhanas happen. Want the jhanas and you've been meditating for years without them. Find the cause. Oh, we've got questions from overseas, oh my goodness. From Dubai and from France. Bhante, restraint of the senses requires a bit of control in the beginning, but it is the faith in the Buddha Sangha which helps restraint, am I right? Exactly, the restraint is just the result of the causes. If you hang around good monks and nuns, Aryas, you find you get restrained. It's not you. And so you don't do the restraint. If you try to do the restraint, it's artificial, it's controlling, you get tense, and you can't do it, it doesn't work. Just like the story of Ajahn Chah, as a 18, 19-year-old novice, he too had lots of lust. And this is one of his favorite stories. He said, I restrained my senses for 3 months of the range retreat. I determined I would not look at a woman. Old woman, young woman, no woman at all. I would not do that. And he had such strong restraint, he managed to do that for 3 months. He never saw a woman for 3 months. And then after his determination was finished, he looked up, the first girl he saw, he was just so overcome by lust, and he couldn't stop it. And he said, look, it didn't work. What's going on? Because that was actually control. And that's not how these things happen. These other things happen. To have restraint. To have restraint. Hang around good teachers. You know, develop things like not the fault-finding mind, which is a lot of times people think restraint is the same as a fault-finding mind. Finding fault in things or in people. That doesn't sort of work. So, find out the causes. Sometimes even just faith, listening to the Dhamma, you find you are restrained. Naturally. You can't help it. Stefano from France. Can association with wise people be realized by reading books and following talks like these, or do you need to live in the presence of Aryans? I experienced some deep meditation, changed many aspects of my life reading your books, but I live in France and there is no Sangha here. We did actually mention that point. It seems, yeah, you can. It seems, you know, sometimes what is the difference between, you know, seeing an enlightened being in the flesh and seeing them on YouTube? Maybe YouTube might not be enough, but if you get these virtual reality machines and you can actually have all the senses there, so it actually is like, almost just like you're right there sort of seeing sort of an Ajahn Chah, even though he's dead. Is that in the presence of the Aryans? So why not? Because some of the power actually goes across. So I say, yes, you can. You can get these things by not being the physical presence of the Aryans, but actually maybe reading books, listening to talks. That's why one part of the commentary where it says, even reading the suttas is like being in the presence of an Aryan. That has got some validity to it. Okay, thank you from overseas as well, and thank you all for listening today. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Another little twist to the Dhamma which you haven't heard before. Sadhu, sadhu. Those of you who want to keep those, please, you can keep them if you wish, but please don't throw them away. If you don't want to keep them, please actually bring them up here, and I can use them another time.
Patipado Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Sāṅgho Sangha na.